Okay, we're starting here on the top of Chof Zayin Amud Aleph, where you did the Mishnah yesterday, which discussed basically principles with regards to Erev Tchumin, principles with regards to Maasir Sheni, and it laid out a klal, a general principle, and then it said, except for these items. And Rabbi Yochanan comes and makes a statement that really undermines that whole premise, which is, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Ein lemeidim min aklalot. You cannot learn from any time it gives or states a general principle in the Mishnah. Even in a place where it says, except for, you would think that when the Mishnah lays out a general principle, okay, so it's right most of the time. But then when the Mishnah specifies the exceptions to the rule, you would think that that's an exact rule. Rabbi Yochanan says, no. That's not an exacting rule. That even when it says, this is the rule except for, there's still other exceptions to the rule, and you can't be guided solely by what's written in the Mishnah. Midekamar afilu b'makom shenemar b'chutz. The fact that Rabbi Yochanan makes this statement, it says, even in a place where it says chutz, michlau, t'lav hochakai, then it's clear that he's not speaking about our Mishnah. He must be speaking about a case where it doesn't have the word chutz in the Mishnah, and he's saying about that Mishnah, you can't learn from the general principles. And even in other Mishnayot, where it says chutz, you still can't learn from those Mishnayot. So where is Rabbi Yochanan's statement made? And that's what the Gemara is searching for. Hechikai. Where is Rabbi Yochanan speaking about? Hotam kai. He's on the Mishnah in Kiddushim. Mishnah Kiddushim says, Kol mitzvat aseh she'azman grama. Any positive, time-bound mitzvah, anashim chayavim, men are obligated in it. V'nashim mipturot, and women are not obligated in it. V'shelo azman grama, and if it's a positive commandment that is not time-bound, echad nashim v'echad anashim. Men and women are both obligated in it. Gemara says, v'glalohu, is that really a general principle? Without any exceptions, the chol mitzvah aseh she'azman grama nashim pturot, any time that you have a positive time-bound mitzvah that women are not obligated, hare. And now the Gemara is going to give you a list of exceptions to that rule. Number one, matzah. Matzah, women are chayavot in matzah. The obligation to eat matzah is only on the first night of Pesach. The other days of Pesach, it's a reshut. It's optional to eat matzah. If you want to eat lechem, if you wanted to eat a seuda with lechem, then you must eat matzah. But otherwise, you're not chayav to eat matzah the remainder of Pesach. The obligation to eat matzah is on the first night of Pesach. There, the Gemara draws a parallel between the Isur of Chametz and the obligation to eat matzah. Because many times in the Torah, when it specifies the obligation to eat matzah, it also mentions the Isur to eat Chametz. So the Gemara says, Kol sheyeshno v'bal tochal Chametz, whoever has the restriction against eating Chametz, is in the mitzvah of kumachol matzah, in the mitzvah of the obligation to eat matzah. And since women are obligated in all lo taseh, in all negative commandments, there are exceptions to that rule as well, but since they're obligated in all negative commandments, they're obligated in the mitzvah of chametz. Because of that, they're also obligated in the mitzvah of matzah. And therefore, women on the night of the Seder are obligated just like men in eating matzah. So there's a time-bound mitzvah, and yet women are chayavot, simcha. When it comes to simcha nachag, they're... The Pasuk says, V'samachta ata uveitecha, that you have to be happy on the Chag, but also beitecha. Beitecha, your family, or in the more narrow sense, beitecha, ishtecha, your wife. So the woman is also chayevet in the mitzvah of simcha when it comes to Yom Tov, despite the fact that, again, it's a time-bound mitzvah. Hakel. Hakel is the year after the Shemitah, in the eighth year, the Sukkot. On the year after the Shemitah, all the people gather together in Yerushalayim, and the Melech gets up on a bima in the Mikdash and reads from sections of Sefer Dvarim. It's a quasi-reenactment of Har Sinai, and there the obligation specifies that men, women, children, everyone is present at that mitzvah. So here you have three mitzvot that are mitzvot aseh she'azman grama, that are positive, time-bound mitzvot, v'nashim chayavot, and yet women are obligated. So that undermines one part of the general principle. V'chol mitzvot aseh she'lo azman grama nashim chayavot. Is it really true that all non-time-bound, positive commandments women are obligated in? V'harei. Now we'll get a list of those that are exceptions to the rule. Number one is Talmud Torah. the learning of Torah. Women are not obligated in Torah because it says that the obligation is on the sons, on the males to learn Torah. The women's obligation in Torah is a machloket harishonim as to whether they're completely exempt or are they obligated in parts of Torah that they are permitted to learn according to the Gemara in Sota. Or, and additionally, maybe they are chayavot in learning Torah to be able to do the maaseh, whatever they need to do, whatever mitzvot they're obligated in, they might be obligated in learning Torah. But for whatever reason, they don't have the general chiyuv or obligation just to learn Torah, they're exempted from it. Piriya v'rivya, to be fruitful and multiply, they're also exempted from this mitzvah because the Torah, when it specifies pru or vu, in the pasuk in Breshit, it also says afterwards, v'kiv shuha, that you will go out and you will master the land. The Gemara says, Kivshua, mi shedarko lichvosh. One who normally goes out to conquer. Who is the one who goes out to battle, goes out to war? That's the man. And that adjacency in the Pasuk said it makes them conclude that the mitzvah pru urvu only applies to men and not to women. There is a Tana who disagrees, but the majority opinion is that piri urivya pru urvu only applies to men or an obligation of men, not an obligation on women. Upijona ben, and the redemption of the firstborn. It's a redemption of the firstborn males. There, the Gemara learns that from the word tipa de, tif de, that the one who is obligated to be redeemed is also the obligated redeemer. Because male children are the ones that are the bechorim that were spared in Mitzrayim, so they're the ones that need to be redeemed. And since they are the ones that need to be redeemed, the Gemara learns from the pasuk of Tipa De Tif De that the one who has to be redeemed must redeem. That means that since the male sons are the ones being redeemed, they're also the ones who have to perform the redeeming. It's only males that are chayav in Pidyon HaBen, not females. Despite the fact that all three of these items have no time limitation associated with them and their positive commandments, nevertheless, the mitzvah says, Shel Zvon Man Grama V'Nashim Turot. And the women are exempted from these mitzvot. So you see from this that Elam Rabbi Yochanan ain lemidim min akvalot. You cannot learn, even when a mishta lays out a general principle, you cannot take that literally. Vafilo b'makom shneimar bar chutz. Even in a location where it says chutz, where it lists the exception in the Mishnah, that's still not enough. So now we'll have examples of that as well.
We don't listen to Kalalim because they don't count.
What Rabbi Yochanan is basically stating is that when the Mishnah says Klal, it doesn't mean 100%. It means 80, 90%.
Right, but then Chutz comes actually do specify, like you said.
Don't take that as a 100% guarantee that that is the fact or that is the case. That will be the case in 80, 90% of the situations, but you can't just say that it's an absolute yes, that if I give you a Klal, that you can automatically apply it without any discernment. You do have to look at it, but it's a good way, it's a good tool to use, to remember in general. We still say it, we still use the tool, like Mishnah and Kiddushin says, the time-bound positive commandments women are turot from. Even though there are plenty of exceptions to that, nevertheless, principle is helpful. It's a helpful guide. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. And lemaidin means don't take it as an exacting rule, take it as a more general feeling or a more general approach. We have another Mishnah where we find that there's a klal, a principle laid out, and despite that fact, there are exceptions to the klal, which is Od Klal Echad Amru. That's the Mishnah in Zavin. They made another principle, or laid out another general principle. Ko Shinisa Agabe Azav Tamei. Anything that is carried by the Zav is Tamei. Ko Shazav Nisa Alav. Anything that carries the Zav, Tahor, is pure. Chutz Min Ha'Ra'uy the Mishkav u'Moshav Adam, with the exception of things that normally are sat on, laid on, or a human being. We're talking about here, it's a major sugya in the Gemara Nida, is how does the Zav convey Tuma? How does the Zav pass Tuma to other objects? In the Torah has a number of psukim describing how the Zav passes Tuma. Most of the psukim discuss if he sits on something, if he lays on something, that conveys Tuma. And that Tuma is an Avha Tuma. It's a high level of Tuma. It conveys Tuma at a very high level. There's something called El Yono Shel Zav, that which is above the Zav. things that are above the Zav also are Mekabel Tumah. They're not as high a level as things that are beneath the Zav, but they're still a very high level of Tumah. They're also an Ava Tumah, as long as the Zav is in contact with them. Once he releases them, then they become a Rishon Le'Tumah. So here the Mishnah describes what is the principle that I should follow with regarding these two types of Tumah. So with regards to Elyono Shel Zav, items that are above the Zav, that means that the Zav is carrying it, not necessarily in contact with it. He doesn't have to necessarily be touching it, and he doesn't necessarily have to be bearing the weight of it. Even if he sticks his finger under something, the fact that his finger is underneath this item already causes a problem, because it's Elyono Shel Zav. It's above the Zav. It's being, quote-unquote, carried by the Zav. So with regard to Elyono Shel Zav, it says, Kosh Nisa Gabe Zav Tamei. That's a general principle that anything that the Zav is under, what's above it will have this din of Tumah. On the other hand, the Kosh Zav Nisa Alav, anything that is carrying the Zav, I mean the Zav himself is being carried by an object, there the objects are Tahor, with three exceptions to that. Mishkav Moshav V'Adam. And these are learned out from the Pesukim. Mishkav Moshav are explicit in the Pasuk. Adam is learned from a riboy in the Pasuk of Otam. Them, meaning then them, including Adam. So if a person is carrying a Zav, or a Zav is on top of a bed, even though they're not directly touching the bed, there might be things that are sitting on top of the bed that they're laying on top of, or the Zav is on a chair, again, not necessarily touching the chair. In those cases, then the Tumah is conveyed. When it's not those three items, then there is no Tumah conveyed by the Zav, even though the Zav is on top of these items. Again, if the Zav is in contact with items, that might be a different problem of Tumah that is conveyed through Nigiyah, through touching. But here we're talking about the conveyance of Tumah, even when he's not touching the item. So here's the principle about how a Zav conveys Tumah above, Elyono Shel Zav, from things being above him, and Tachtono Shel Zav, where things are beneath the Zav. V'tuleka. And the Bai says, is that it? Is that the end of the list of items upon which he sits, or he is on top of, and they become Tamei? Vayika Merkav. What about Merkav? Riding. Riding as opposed to sitting and sleeping. Torah mentions all three of them. Torah mentions, Kol Merkav, Asher Yikav Alav Azav. Torah mentions that as being a separate category of Tumah. Hai Merkav, Heichi Dami. What exactly is this riding that you are Tamei, or is made Tamei by the Zav? Idiyoti Valet. If he's sitting on it, Hainu Moshav. Then it's no different than Moshav. Now obviously it has to be a distinction, and Tosafot points this out, between Moshav and Merkav, because the Torah separates them into two separate categories in the Psukim. But that's at the Torah level. We want to know, within the principle of Tachtono Shel Zav, does the word Moshav have a broader meaning, meaning Moshav in the Mishnah means Moshav Merkav, without any consideration or distinction between them? But isn't there a Merkav that is not Moshav? And that's what the Gemara is asking over here. So, Anan Hachi Kaminan. I have this question. Ha'ika Gaba Du'ukfa. The back of the saddle, which literally means the handle of the saddle. Titanya, we have a Braita in the Tosefta, Ukaf, Tamei Moshav. The Ukaf, which is the saddle itself, is Tamei Moshav, because that's something you normally sit on. So it'll be Mikabel Tumah through being sat on. And that is Moshav. So there we don't need Merkav. Vehatafus, Tamei Merkav. But the holder or the handle of the saddle becomes Tamei, not because you're sitting on it, but rather because you are riding on it. Think of the saddle. Anybody's ridden on a horse, you can see on the saddle, there's a main saddle where you sit. And many times on the front of the saddle, there's a piece of metal or projection that comes up that you can hold on to. That is what the tafus is. And that becomes Tamei Merkav. That's not Moshav. If he touched it, but if he simply rides on the saddle, this will become Tamei, not because he's sitting on the saddle. If he's not sitting on the tafus, it'll become Tamei just because he's riding the animal and riding the saddle. This item will become Tamei even without contact with the handle. Right, so in our saddles, it's part of the saddle. I don't know if they might have been separate, or even if it's not physically separate, it might be separate because it's made out of metal as opposed to the saddle, which was either a blanket or leather. So it was already considered to be a separate item. Then it would drop down a level of Tumah if it weren't for the fact that it has the status of Merkav. What you see here is that the Zav can convey Tumah underneath him through Merkav, and Merkav is not mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Chutz, Me'amoshav, Hamishkav, and Adam. Merkav is absent from the Mishnah. Now, you could have argued that Moshav is all-inclusive, and includes Merkav, because generally Merkav is also Moshav. Problem is, now we have an instance of Merkav where it's not Moshav, and yet the Mishnah doesn't mention it. Elishma mino. In the medim in a kolot, vafilu makom shnemar bochutz. Can't learn, or you can't say that it's 100% accurate when we say there is a principle, even when it says a principle, and these are the exceptions. Because sometimes there are more exceptions than are mentioned. Now again, it means that, not that it's worthless, but it's giving you the biggest categories. It's telling you this is the general category, general rule you can follow. These are probably the biggest exceptions to the rule, but there might be some other exceptions that are left out. But this gives you a good picture of 90% of what's going on. But that means that there still is some exceptions, and you can't take it as 100% rule. Amar Avina, Avitem Rav Nachman, Af Anan Namitanina. We also have a Mishnah, our Mishnah, and this is why it's brought over here, the statement of Yochanan. B'chol ma'arvim u'mishtafim chutz min ha'mayim ve'ha'melach. You can make an eruv or shitif mevot with everything except water and salt. And the Gemara says, v'tu lekat, are there no more items? Now, this is very controversial, the piece over here. You can see there's an aleph and a bet in the Gra. And the reason is because the Gra believes that the Girsa here should be simply add in v'chule. Because the Gra believes that the Gemara here is not discussing the first case in the Mishnah, which is b'chol ma'arvim mishtatfim, but rather the second case in our Mishnah, which is that you can be kesef maser sheni, can be used to purchase any food item chutz mi'amayim v'amelach. And the Gra therefore amends the Gemara here to read b'chol ma'arvim mishtatfim chutz mi'amayim v'amelach v'chule. Because the Gemara is not referencing the first case, but rather the second case of the Mishnah. And then, v'tulaka, v'ayika, k'meim u'pitriot. Don't we have the exception of k'meim and pitriot, which are fungi, mushrooms, items that do not grow from the ground? Now, Tosafot over here disagrees with the Gra. It's very difficult, because Tosafot over here basically says that by kesef maser sheni, you could buy k'meim and pitriot, and by eruvan, shituf mevot, you could not use the Mehim and Pitriot based on the Gemara here. Problem is that there's an explicit Torah Kohanim, and that's what the Gra bases his position on, that says that you cannot buy Mehim and Pitriot with Kesef Maiser Sheni. And therefore, the Gra believes that the statement of the Gemara here isn't referencing Kesef Maiser Sheni, what food items you can purchase with Kesef Maiser Sheni. The exception is Mayim and Melech. In addition to that exception, it's Mehim and Pitriot, and that's what's found in Torah Kohanim. On the other hand, Tosfot is explicit that that's not what he believes is happening here. And he thinks it's talking about the first case in the Mishnah, the case of Eruvin Shituf Mivot. And you can see in the Hagot Marav Renschenberg, in the last line, he says, V'tzarchiyon b'tosafot, Dibri Amatzkiyo man dimadne, Desavri dinikachim b'keser meiser, Neged hatarat kohanim, Shevi agonzal. That that's against the explicit Torat Kohanim that says that that's just not the case. And so he questions, how did Tosfot come up to this position, despite the fact that Torat Kohanim does not agree? Now, he could say that our Gemara is arguing on Torat Kohanim, but it seems more likely that the Gra's Girsa is more proper here, that Gemara is discussing Keser Maiser Sheni. Just adds the word v'chule by the aleph.
Chutz min ha'mayim v'ha'melach
v'chule.
It's not referring to the
Yeah, it's referring to the chule.
Yeah,
exactly. So Gemara says, "Veikah kamei pitriot shma mina, ein lemidim mina kolot to fill makom shnei marbachutz." Therefore, you cannot take it as 100% guarantee when you have a general principle, even when it gives you the exceptions. Our Mishnah gives you a general principle, gives you exceptions, but there are additional exceptions that are not mentioned in the Mishnah. Again, the klal and the exceptions in our Mishnah cover 90% of the cases, even 95% of the cases. There's this little exception that we just didn't mention in the Mishnah, but the Mishnah captures most. But again, you can't use it as 100% accurate principle, even when it mentions the exceptions to the rule. Nekol nikach v'kesef maaser sheni. Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, chad matnei ha'eruv v'chad matnei ha'maser. So it's very interesting that this is the next line in the Gemara. Here we're going to have a machloket. The alternative gyos is Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina. We're about to have a machloket between them. As for the next statement in the Gemara, is that statement said about the eruv, or is that said about the maaser sheni? So even here at the Gemara level, they're already having a question as to how to apply a statement that was made, whether it's applied to one part of the Mishnah or the other part of the Mishnah. And it would make sense then that the previous Gemara, that we might even have a Machloket Rishonim as to where it applies. which is Chad Matnia Eruv. One says it about Eruv. Lo shna ela mayim bifnei atzmo umelech bifnei atzmo. It's only true that you may not do this when you have water alone or salt alone. The in me'arvin, that you can't use that for the Eruv tchumin. Aval b'mayim umelech me'arvin, if you have salt water, and they're mixed together, then that would be fine to use for Eruv tchumin. They're only problematic when they are separated, not when they are together. V'chad matnei amaser. If one uses this qualification with regards to ma'aser sheni, lo shanu ela mayim bifnei atzmo umelech bifnei atzmo. It's only true if it's water alone or salt alone that you can't purchase it. Deini kachin. But if it's salt water, you could buy it with kesef ma'aser sheni. Man de matni amaser kol shekein ha'eruv. The one who states it about ma'aser, then certainly they would say it about eruv tchumin. Man de matni ha'eruv, the one who says it about eruv, aval ma'aser lo. But if he said it about the eruv, he wouldn't necessarily apply it to ma'aser. Right. Tosfot asks about this. How do you know that it's true? Because, look at our Gemara. We just said before that kameyim and pitriot, the fungi and mushrooms, cannot be used for Eruv, but they could be used by kesef ma'aser sheni. So why are you so sure that one of matnei amaser would automatically say Eruv? We see here that Eruv has a chumrah by it. How are you so certain? So Tosfot says that categorizes certain areas, and he says that there are certain items where it's clear that Meiser and Eruv have a distinction between them. In that case, Meiser is always more chamor than Eruv. In this one category, there is a case where Eruv is more chamor. But what you see from Tosafot is that he clearly thinks that the previous Gemara was talking about Eruv and not about Maser. And he says it explicitly, that Eruv has the exception of Kameim and Pitriot, and Meiser Sheni does not have that exception. Again, just the opposite of what the Gra says. My timer. What is the reasoning that they don't believe that it works by maser? It's because peira bi'inon. We need to have something that is a fruit. Something that is a derivative or of a fruit, which we'll see in a second. The Gemara is going to give you the derashah. Kiata Rav Yitzchak matnei amaser. When Rav Yitzchak came, he specified that this qualification was said about Maiser Sheni. And based on the Gemara's conclusion, that would mean that it's said about Maiser Sheni and Eruv. Because once you said it about Maiser Sheni, certainly you would say it about Eruv. Meitave. Heid Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, lifnei Rabbi Eliezer, shobeit abayu lochim tzir bekesif maser. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish came before Rabbi Eliezer and said, my father's household used to buy tzir brine with kesif maser, with the money of Maser Sheni, brine being salt water. Samalo Shemalo Shemata. Maybe you didn't hear that clearly. Elishakirve Dagim Meuravim Bahen. Maybe that is only true when there are entrails, innards of the fish that are mixed in it. It's a fish brine. So Fafilu Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish Lo Kamar Elabitzir Deshumna Deperahi Vamayim Melach Lo. And even Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, who says that he's talking about plain brine, not with any fish pieces in it, nevertheless, he says that it is brine that came from the fish, so that the salt water has mixed within it shemen, oil. It has some sort of oil, fish oil, that leaked, or is a part of this brine, and therefore, it has a higher status than just plain salt water. So it's the fat or the oil of the fish that's inside the water. So that gives it, quote-unquote, substance. Because of that, you can use the kesef ma'aser sheni. So at least we have an agreement between them that it's not clean brine that you can use. It's only brine that has some additional item in it. Whether that requirement is as high as you need the pieces of fish in it, or simply the oil, the fat of the fish, that we don't know. That's a machloka between them. But they still don't say that plain brine is enough. Samar of Yosef. Lo nitzrucha. Ela shenatan l'tochan shemen. So Rav Yosef says that statement of Rabbi Yitzchak that says mayim u'melach that are mixed together, brine, that you can use kesef ma'aser sheni to purchase it, that's only in the case when there is shemen, when there is oil inside of it. So what he is basically saying is, all those statements before where we said that salt water is okay, that we didn't really mean salt water, we meant salt water plus, but salt water with something else in it. And that's how we reconcile between this braita that we just quoted, where we have everybody agreeing at least on a base that there needs to be oil in there. And therefore, all those statements we made before of lo shanu were about oil-based items. So it's not simply brine, but you have to have something beyond the brine that's in there. He says, okay, if that's the case, the reason that you're allowed to buy it has nothing to do with the salt water. It all has to do with the oil or the fat that is found inside of it. So then why are you telling me that the reason you could buy it is because you have salt water here? The salt water is irrelevant. If you had no salt water in the oil, you could buy it. You had salt water by itself, you cannot buy it. Salt water with oil, you can buy it. So what is causing the ability to buy here? It's the oil. So there's really nothing to do with salt water. Why mention salt water at all? When it says, Lotzricha, nothing to be mayim u'melach b'havla'a. Basically, you purchased the oil, and you paid too much for the oil because there was also brine mixed in there. So this happens on Shvi'it. It's a mechanism for buying when you are not allowed to buy one of the items, and one of the items you're allowed to buy. So what you do is you pay too much for the item that you're allowed to buy, you overpay for it, and then they throw in the other item for free. So that's basically what happens here. You're spending money. The money is too much. If you had just bought the oil by itself, you're spending too much. But you spend too much on the oil because the person is going to throw in the salt water with it. So even though it's not permissible to buy salt water with the money, nevertheless, if you spend that money on the oil, and along with that comes the brine, then that's not a problem. And that's what the Gemara is coming to teach you, this concept of havla'a. The ability, if you're buying something that is mutar to purchase, if something else comes along with it, you're allowed to pay too much for it, and that item is included in the package. So now we have a limud that says that. Havla mishari, are you allowed to do this? In. Yes, you are, v'atanya. And we have a braita that shows you that you're allowed to do this, or this loophole exists, which is, ben bag bag omer, babakar. So this is talking about Maaser Sheni. We're going to darshan this pasuk a little later today, which is, v'natata akesed b'chol asher taveh nafshecho. You can use or spend the money that you redeem the Maaser Sheni on with anything that you want. And then the Torah, after it says you can do whatever you want, lists a number of items or examples. Gives you the pratim, which is babakar, batzon, bayayin, ubashechar. Gives you a number of examples. And then it concludes the pasuk with ubachor asher tishalcha nafshecha. So it goes back into a klal, which we'll get to in a minute. That's how this is all learnt out. But for right now, we're focused on the items enumerated in the middle of the pasuk. And as Tosafot points out, we're focused on the extra ba. The bet in the beginning, that's what generates this limud, which is babakar, lameid, lokhim bakar, agav, uro. You're allowed to buy an animal, including its skin. Now, the skin is not a food item. So when you pay for the animal, they're going to charge you for the animal plus the skin, because the skin is useful, the hide is useful after the fact. So despite the fact that when you're spending the money is being outlaid for the meat and the skin, nevertheless, that is mutar. Plus, you can even take the skin afterwards and utilize it, and you don't have to sell it again and then use that to buy more Maaser Sheni. It's chulin the gamre. Ubatzon, melameich lochim tzon agav gizata. You can purchase a sheep, even though along with the sheep comes the wool. And you're going to be charged for the wool, because after the fact you get to keep the wool. So even though you're spending keser Maaser Sheni towards the animal as a whole, and that includes items that you cannot eat, that is permissible. And again, the wool is chulin. You don't have to have your hands open and have the wine pointed into your hands. You can buy the wine in the bottle. You can buy the wine in the barrel. It's part of the price. And yet you can spend the money to buy it with those items included. And again, the kankan, the bottle goes, even though you're spending the Maaser Sheni. You're allowed to buy temed, which has fermented. Temet is that they used to pour water through the leftover grape skins, grape pits, and it used to absorb some of the grape from that or the bacteria, yeast, that allowed it to ferment. And so despite the fact that there's nothing of substance in here besides water, because the water just grabbed from the items that it went through, nevertheless, you're allowed to purchase with the Kesef Maaser Sheni this item, because after it ferments, it is a food item or food substance, despite the fact that it's just made of water. So, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, man dimitargem li babakar, aliba de ben bagbag. Whoever can explain to me the limud of babakar, according to ben bagbag, movilna mane abatre de be masuta. I'll carry his clothes after him to the bathhouse. Basically, I'll be his servant for the day if he can explain this to me. It's so difficult, I don't think there's anybody who can explain it. And therefore, I'm willing to make the offer that I'll service anyone who can explain this to me. My timer. Why is it that Rabbi Yochanan thinks that there's a problem here? Kulu tzrichi levar mi bakar. The reason is that all of them are necessary except for babakar, delo tzrich. We don't need it. My tzrichi. What does it mean that we need all of these items? Di katav rachmana babakar. Had the Torah written babakar only, hava mina bakar hu demizdavim, that you're allowed to purchase a bakar, a gavoro, bishum de gufehu. Because they're inseparable. You can't buy a bakar without the hide on it. The bakar naturally comes with its skin on it, and therefore that's why it's permissible in that case. But when it comes to a sheep with its wool, where the wool is not an integral part of the sheep, emalo, maybe in that case not. We'll tell you shear it first, and then you can buy the sheep. So that's why we have batzon. But had the Torah only written batzon, agav gizata, that you can buy the tzon, including its wool, that's because even though it's not integral to the animal, it's still attached to the animal, and that's why you're permitted. But it comes to wine with the barrel, or the wine with the bottle, maybe not, because even though they help, they're not attached. They're not mechubar to the wine. They don't come one and the same with the wine. Okay, the reason you can buy the barrel or the bottle is because that's the way that you keep wine. Otherwise, you can't keep wine without these external carrying items. So therefore, it's considered to be a part of the wine. When it comes to this temet that is fermented, which is simply, yua means it has some sort of sourness or pungency to it. So it's simply pungency, not anything of substance. Aim alone, maybe not. So katav rachmana shechar, and that's why the Torah writes shechar. That we show that you need all of them. So now let's work backwards. Why don't you just write shechar and you would have known all of them? So Gemara says, vi katav rachmana b'shechar, have a mina my shechar. Had the Torah only written shechar, I would have thought shechar is a dvela ki'ilit, which are fig cakes from the place called ki'ilit, the peiro, which is really fruits, and that would qualify. But there are fruits that have an alcoholic side to them. They are intoxicating. You become inebriated if you eat them. The Mishnah talks about a person, a Kohen, who eats Dvela Kilit. He's not allowed to go up in Duchen. He's not allowed to go do Avoda because he's considered to be inebriated. So even though they're not grapes or wine, they are fruits that have this intoxicating effect on individuals. And that could have been what it was included by Sheikhar. Of a yain, agav kankano, emalo. But what wine and kankano, there we're going to say no. Because he said that only thing that was mutar was a fruit. Not something with its barrel. Fika tachran yain, if then afterwards it also had yain. And that would teach us yain, agav kankano. Dine it to red day. Because it's essential to keeping the wine is having the barrel or the bottle. Of a tzon, agav gizata, emalo. Maybe the tzon and the wool. The wool's not necessary for the animal. Therefore, we would say no over there. That even its wool will be included. Babakar, lamali. Why do I need babakar? If I already know that you can take the wool of the sheep, then certainly you can take the skin of the cow. Because the skin is, mechubar, is integral to the animal. The wool is not. And if you're already allowing me to buy the wool, I certainly should be able to buy the skin. So then why do I need the word babakar, that inclusion? Vichitema. So what are you going to suggest? Iloka davarana babakar. Had the Torah never written the word bakar, hava mina tzon al gabe ora in al gab gizatalo. Then I would have thought the word tzon was not talking about its wool, but rather talking about its hide. And that's why I need bakar. Bakar comes to teach me hide, so that I know tzon is talking about wool. So Mar says, katav rachmana babakar, the tuye oro. That's why we have bakar to say that oro is here and gizata is yaitele tzon la tuye gizata. So therefore tzon is available to teach you about the wool. Where it says, Ilo kavtar rachmana babakar, had the Torah never written babakar, lo hava mina tzon agav ora. I would never have learnt that tzon agav ora in, that the hide of the tzon is permitted, agav gizata lo, but the wool is not permitted, dimkein, because it's a simple solution. Why did the Torah use tzon? The Torah could have used bakar, and instead it used tzon. The only reason to use tzon instead of bakar is to teach you about wool. If the only thing that it was going to teach you from the word sown is the hide, then just write the word bakar and forget about sown. The fact that the Torah wrote sown already indicates to you the ktov ha'karim bakar, the b'meilaiter late sown. Because by itself, the sown is left over. Because the Torah should have written bakar if it wanted just hides. And therefore, if it wrote sown, Tzon automatically means that it's more than just hides. It must mean including wool. And now, once the Torah wrote Tzon, which automatically teaches us about its wool, Babakar Lamali, why do I need Babakar at all? Hashta Tzon Agav Yizata Mizdabno. Here, Tzon with its wool is purchased. Bakar Agav Aromi Bite. That you have any questions about? Hainu Dekamai Rabbi Yochanan. That's why Rabbi Yochanan made the statement, Man Dimitagim Li Babakar. Aliba de ben bagbag, movila mane, the be mesuta. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan said, whoever can explain to me what the necessity of Babakar is, in the limud of ben bagbag, I will carry his clothes after him to the bathhouse. I mean, I don't understand why you need the limud of Babakar according to ben bagbag. Without Babakar, I could put everything that you stated, even without that riboy in the pasuk. By my kamiflage, now the Gemara jumps back to the machloket. Before, about what is included in what you can purchase with Kesef Maaser Sheni. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, and either Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Elazar, Vahane Tanai de Lekaman, and these Tanaim that we're about to mention, what is the machloket between them? Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, ve Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, Darshe Ribuye Umiute. They use the system of Ribuy and Miyut, which is to include and to exclude. Vahane Tanai, and these other Tanaim, use the system of Darshe Klalei Uprate. General principles and specifics. So these are two methodologies for learning the psukim, and they result in different outcomes. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish ve Rabbi Elazar dashi ribuye meute. They dashi na ribuye meute. Venatata kesef bechol asher tave nafshecha. Riba. Torah says you can spend the money on anything you want. That is a ribuy. That is an inclusion that makes it include everything. Babakar, ubatzon, ubayayin, ubashechar, miyet gave you exceptions to that. It reduced it. B'chol asher tishalcha nafshecha. And then the puzzle concludes with another ribuy, chazar v'riba. Came back and now gives you another inclusive term. So we have an inclusive term in the beginning, which is expansive. Then you have a narrow set of terms. And then you have expansive term again. Riba umiyet veriba. That's called a riboy miyot to riboy. Riba kol. When you work with the system of riboy miyot, when you have a riboy miyot to riboy, you include everything. My rabbi. What have you included? Rabbi komile. Everything's included. Uma miyet. And what is excluded? So the miyutim come to tell you that there are certain things that are excluded. What are the things that you're excluded? So the Rabbi Elazar miyet seer. According to Rabbi Elazar or Rabbi Elazar, you exclude brine because salt water is not enough. You need salt water plus, or the brine plus the fish entrails or something inside of there. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish miyet mayim b'melach. Simple salt water is not enough, but if you have shemen, if you have oil or fat in there, that's enough. So that's what the miyot. The riboy miyot to the riboy comes and says the riboy includes everything. The miyotim come to tell you that you have to exclude something. There's some exception to the rule, and the exception should be built around what is mentioned there, and therefore they exclude these single items. Correct. Those are examples that you can give, but they're a miyot. They're exclusionary. They're saying these yes, other items no. So what are the other items that are no? The miyot says that because they are specifying what you can bring, that implies that there are other things that you cannot bring. So that's the way that riboy miyot to riboy works, which is that basically the assumption is you've included everything, and there are going to be certain singular exceptions to the rule. And here, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish and Rabbi Elazar list for you their specific exclusion. On the other hand, v'hanei t'nai, the other t'naim, darshe klalei uprate. They darshen it as a general principle and specifics. The tiny, but not tata kesef b'chol asher tave nafshecha klal. That's a general principle. Babakar ubatzon bayayinu b'sheichar prat. Those are specifics. Ubechol asher tishalcha nafshecha. That is chazar b'klal. I'll give you a general principle again. Klal uprat uklal. This is one of the 13 midot of Rabbi Yishmael. If a klal, a general principle, specifics, and then a general principle, iatadan elukeina prat. That tells you that the klal is governed by the prat, but not in a sense of it's narrow to the prat, but the pratim lay out for you in categories, general categories that will be included. And therefore you have to find the common denominator between the items that are mentioned in the klal uprat uklal. And that is, ma prat mifurash. These pratim, these four items that are enumerated, what's the common denominator between them? Pri mi pri, vigidulei karka. They all stem from the ground, they grow from the ground, and they're pri mi pri. That they give birth or they reproduce by themselves. That means either they give birth or they are items that you can plant the seeds and then they will grow. And that the items that have built into them the mechanism for reproduction. So that's pre-mi-pri. And gedulei karka, they grow from the ground. Now you see from here, and this is something that is not so clear other places in Shas, and there we shouldn't even deal with it, that bakar and so on are considered to be gedulei karka. Even though they don't grow from the ground, the fact is that they're sustained from feedstock that comes from the ground, and because of that, they're considered to be gedulei karka over here. Because those are mentioned in the pasuk, babakar ubatzon, and here the Gemara calls that gedulei karka. In other places in Shas, they exclude animals as not being gedulei karka, so there you have to reconcile between them. But at least here, that's what the Gemara believes. So af kol primi privi gedulei karka. So therefore, you're going to include any item that fits into that category, not just the items that are specified in the pasuk, but items that fit the category of the items specified in the pasuk, which are these characteristics, which are primi pri and gedulei karka.
So in the case of primi, what is
the Mila comes to say that there are singular exceptions to the rule. But riboy miot and riboy, miot doesn't come to set a category. It says everything's included. The miot, what we call the miot, is that there are items listed here to tell you that these items, yes, but there's one or two things that are no. And you have to figure out what those one or two things are. But that's the only exceptions. As opposed to klal uprat uklal includes a categorical definition, which says that everything that fits this categorical definition of the pratim, that will be included. More than those pratim, but only by the common denominator of these.
Those pratim specifically as well.
Yes, those pratim, of course, are included, because they're what establish the category. By riba miyot riba, the basic assumption is everything is included. There's one or two exceptions to the rule. It's much more expansive, much more inclusive, the riba miyot riba. The Tanya Idach, there's another braita. Ma prat mifurash vlad vladot aretz. Af kol vlad vladot aretz. So instead of saying pri-mi-pri, which is that it reproduces, and it's gedulei karka, that it grows from the ground or sustained from the ground, the other braita says that vlad and vladot aretz, that they give birth, and they're also created from the ground. They were created from the aretz. And so my benayu, what's the difference between them? I'll mention it now. We're going to come back tomorrow because this Gemara continues through the middle of tomorrow's Amud. But Amar Abaye, Dagim Mika Ben Ayub. The difference between them is fish. The band Amar Pri Umi Pri Vigdulei Karka Hani Dagim Gedulei Karka Ninu. So if you say that they reproduce and they grow from the ground, meaning that they're sustained from the ground, those Dagim are classified as Gedulei Karka. Band Amar Vlad Vladot Aretz. The fish were created from water, and therefore they do not qualify to be included in that category based on the second klal prat in the second braita. The Gemara is going to challenge that and then try to find the real difference between them, but this is the start of that process to understand between the two braitot. If you say the common denominator between them is that they reproduce, and they are gedulei karka, they grow from the ground, versus if you say that the common denominator between them is that they reproduce, and they were created from the ground, what is the nafkamina if you say that that's the common denominator in the klal prat uklal? Is there a difference between them? Right now, the Gemara has supposed that the gim was an exception. Gemara will reject that and then move on to other possibilities as to what the exception is. So this gets us back to the beginning of the story here with kesef maisu sheni as to what is the limitation of kesef maisu sheni. And that's based on the pasuk that is either darshan as a riboy miot riboy, which says everything's included as kesef maisu sheni except for a couple of exceptions. And that's the way Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish and Rabbi Elazar learn. Or is it a klal uprat uklal, which means that there are certain categories of food items that are included who have the share of the common denominator or the category of the pratim that are mentioned there. And again, we have a machloket braitot as to which categories or which is the common denominator between them. Again, we'll continue with that tomorrow.